Welcome to the Andy Dare Show. This is episode 21. This week I'm joined by Craig Wedren, singer, songwriter, and film scorer. We talk about his old band, Shudder to Think. We also discuss Discord Records. And we also discuss just how he's so close to the comedy collective known as The State. Thank you so much for listening. All right, thank you everybody so much for tuning in to the 21st episode of the Andy Dare Show. I'm your host, Andy Dare, and it is a privilege of mine to be joined via Skype by Craig Wedren. How you doing, Craig?
Good. How you doing?
Very well. I'm so psyched to have you on. I'm a longtime fan. I remember picking up a Pony Express record off a cassette at a Walmart or something in like 94 or 5. So longtime fan and a longtime follower of your career. So what's new with Craig so far?
I was listening to I was driving in the car last night, and my wife and I picked up about 60 or 70 cassettes that our neighbor was selling on as part of a garage sale. And it was all of his son's. It was his son's cassette collection, which was essentially mine and my wife's cassette collection from when we were young, because this guy's son was the same age. So I was driving around yesterday listening to a cassette of Zenyatta Mandata and Ghost in the Machine by The Police. And there are certain records that I decided are meant to be listened to on kind of crappy sounding cassettes and driving around in a station wagon. And
exactly.
And, I never listened to Pony Express record on cassette, but I definitely I feel like it deserves to be revisited.
Yeah, I think it was like a funky color too, like yellow or something like that. But yeah, it just stuck out. You guys had it was the grunge time at that point, and you guys really threw a monkey wrench in the system by doing all sorts of crazy arrangements and, you know, really original songwriting. So,
thank you.
Awesome. Like, I want to know what's up next for you as far. I mean, I did hear Are We off the new album Wand, and how's the progress coming on Wand?
It's coming great. It's all finished. The album comes out September 27th, I think. And we're just preparing to shoot another video for, I don't know if you saw the video for Are We, it's this crazy 360 interactive, 360 degree interactive, super fun, trippy video. We're shooting another one of those in a couple weeks for the song Crush You, which is going to be the next single.
That is awesome. And I heard like last year you guys did a little like acoustic tour, you and Greg Dooley of the Afghan Whigs and Twilight Singers.
Yeah,
how was that?
It was great. It was super fun. It was good. A, it was just great to play every night. B, because I don't get to do that enough in my current life. But it was also really good just to kind of get my chops together in terms of playing solo, because I'm so accustomed to having a band to back me, and it's easy to kind of fall back on that kind of volume and density of sound. And so it was really nice just to be out there all by myself with my nads on the chopping block. It was great. By the end, I definitely felt very, very able.
Awesome. What kind of guy is Greg? And did you do you guys go way back, or did you just meet him?
Greg's great. I've known him since the early 90s. Shudder to Think and Afghan Whigs played some shows together. And we were just sort of, and we just had a lot of mutual friends, actually, in weirdly in kind of the film and TV world. Donal, I don't know if you know who Donal Logue is. He's a great actor.
Yeah, he did the MTV cab driver commercials, right?
That's right. Exactly. So Donal and Greg were really good friends, and Donal and Shudder to Think were good friends. So it was just sort of a nice community of weirdos. And Greg and I would run into each other, maybe annually over the years. And I happened to run into him last summer. It was probably about a year ago. And he told me he was doing this acoustic tour, and I asked him if he was playing Los Angeles and if he needed an opener. To give me a call, because I'd been in TV and film scoring land for a while, and I was really itching to get out there and play some music. So next thing I know, he just called me up and invited me on, a week or two of the tour on the East Coast. And so it just worked out perfectly, and it was really, really fun. I traveled with those guys for a few days, and it was great. It was fun being in a van with a bunch of dudes, and it also reminded me how I'm kind of glad that I'm not actually in a real band anymore, and I'm kind of free to do as I please. But it was super fun, and Greg was amazing. His band was great, and you know, I've always been a fan and continue to be. So that was a treat.
Very cool. I like how you guys are so different, but you guys, you know, found common ground doing this tour. So that was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think our music's different, but there's sort of a, a singular, each of us have a very distinct, we're both misfits.
I like that. Yeah. Well, I'm going to take it all the way back for my listeners. And before I do that, we can follow you at Twitter at Craig Wedren. And it's craigwedren.com. Am I right?
Yeah, craigwedren.com is my website. And my handle on Twitter is just Craig Wedren, at Craig Wedren.
Makes it nice and simple. I like that. So, taking it all the way back, where were you born? And how did you end up meeting the guys who would go on to do The State and do Reno 911, that whole collective there?
I was born in New York City in 1969, and very quickly my family and I moved to Ohio, where my mom and dad are originally from. So I grew up mainly, I think from about maybe age 2 or 3 till about 16 years old in Cleveland. When I was 4 years old, I met my still best friend, David Wayne, and Stuart Blumberg, because David's last name is Wayne and my last name is Wedren, and we went to Park Synagogue Day Camp together in Cleveland, and so our cubbies were next to each other. David was already best friends with Stuart Blumberg, and then the three of us got to be best friends. David went on to be in The State and direct Wet Hot American Summer and just finished up this new movie called Wanderlust, which I did the music for. We went to college together, and I was always the music guy, and he was always the comedian and the video guy. So we just sort of came up together, each doing our own thing and helping each other out. And, you know, really, we do the same thing now that we did when we were 11 years old. It's just we do it sort of on a larger scale. Stuart Blumberg, who's the third best friend in that little triangle, is a screenwriter who wrote the movie The Kids Are All Right and is about to direct his first movie. So, you know, we all, and actually the three of us are working on a movie that's sort of our story as friends growing up together. So, you know, we kind of like to try and keep it all in the family and sort of keep growing the, we sort of maintain the dream, but kind of keep inflating it.
Yeah, I do love that because, like, especially in this business, you never really find people that are still getting along with people that they met in, like, early elementary school. I think that's awesome.
So. Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, you know, fortunately for us, the relationships are very complementary. You know, I do music. David is a comedian who directs. Stuart is a writer. So we don't step on each other's toes. We really sort of complement each other's skills. You know, as opposed to, for instance, when you're in a band, you know, it's a bunch of guys and, you know, there's the classic thing of the singer and the guitar player or some other member of the band, you know, all vying for sort of the same, jockeying for the same position. And there's just not quite, you know, everybody's stepping on each other's toes. So especially at such a young age, such a young and cocky and ego-driven age, as when you're in a band, like in your teens and 20s, a lot of feelings get hurt and friendships get sort of dashed.
Yeah.
In the case of Shudder to Think, and in the case of, you know, Nathan Larson and I, or Chris Matthews and I, we were able ultimately to salvage those friendships that started in high school in D.C., which is where I moved when I was 16 years old. My dad was living in D.C. by that point, and I needed to get out of Cleveland. So I moved to D.C., which is where I joined Shudder to Think. And that's where Nathan and I got to be best friends, too. So that whole relationship carried through college, where I was attending NYU with David and the rest of the state. or the rest of what came to be the state. But then by the end of Shudder to Think's run, 12 years later, really our friendships were pretty badly damaged, and it took almost a decade to kind of get back into brotherhood with each other, which I'm happy to report we are now.
You are now getting along. That's awesome. Okay. Well, how about like early vocal inspirations? I mean, when I hear you, I hear somebody that's totally original with their vocal styles. And one thing I don't know if you've ever gotten this. How about like Roger McGuinn of the Byrds?
Oh, that's interesting. Certainly not consciously, but I hear that. I definitely hear that. You know, I listened to the Byrds growing up. You know, basically like I think my mom had like a Byrds greatest hits record, or maybe Mr. Tambourine Man or something like that. Yes. So I was listening to that for sure, but it wasn't a conscious thing. Definitely the harmonic structures seeped in somewhere. You know, people have also said, interestingly, speaking of LA kind of psychedelic, like Arthur Lee and Love and stuff. I hear too, although I wasn't really aware of it when I was young. You know, growing up, I was imitating my heroes, who ranged from Ozzy Osbourne to Susie Sue. And really, I think like on the first Shudder to Think record, Curses, it's actually a perfect kind of offspring of my imitating Ozzy and imitating Susie and coming up with my own thing.
That is really cool. Yeah, putting them all in a blender and seeing what comes out, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. And then gradually, I sort of found my own thing. And at this point, I think, you know, I'm finally sort of comfortable in my own voice. You know, it was a lot of casting about and a lot of searching and a lot of trying out different styles and really just kind of literally shrieking to be heard over the guitars. You know, my speaking voice is fairly deep, but my singing voice is fairly high. A lot of that is because I always liked
Through the murk, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a big proponent of melody. I was always a very melodic singer and not much of a screamer. And in order to get my melodies heard, I had to sing in a really high register just to cut through the guitars, because baritone singing voices get lost when you have, a really dense squall of distorted guitars. I think that combined with the fact that I was always attracted to female voices more than male voices, or high register male voices, you know, Freddie Mercury or Steve Perry or, you know, Ozzy Osbourne or Ronnie James Dio or whoever it is. It was just always more attractive to me. So I was always imitating as a kid, like when I was 12, I was always trying to sing more like those people. And then it just led naturally into kind of me finding my own style in that range.
That's cool. Yeah, I've heard it like change and turn into different styles all throughout all the different records. And nowadays, it seems like they want to find bands that are completely found their sound by their debut album. But I love how you guys found a way to like change and change with the times a little bit. And I like that.
Thank you.
How about taking it back to the first Shudder to Think show? Where and was it at?
That's a very good question. I don't remember. Where was the first Shudder to Think show? I mean, I want to say DC Space, but I think that's a lie. I think that's a romantic memory. I think it took us a while. I think it took us a while to earn our cool cred to play DC Space. It was probably somewhere like Barbecue Iguana or maybe like a Moose Lodge somewhere.
How did you guys end up choosing Discord? I know it was after the first album, right? And then you went to Discord?
Yeah, exactly. Discord chose us. Basically, I went to high school with Amanda Mackay, who's Ian's little sister. She was a year younger than me. She was actually in the same grade as Nathan at the same school. We went to this really awesome kind of punk, hippie, alternative school in D.C. called the Field School, and which was a far cry from the all-boys prep school that I had gone to in Cleveland prior to that. So I was really happy and super into music. And Shudder to Think started. It was at least partly a Field School band. The original guitar player, Chris Matthews, had gone to Field School, and I was at Field School. And Amanda Mackay was just starting a sister label, the Discord, called Samich Records. And so she wanted to put out the Shudder to Think record. So we really have Amanda to thank. And then through that, Ian became interested as more and more, we started kind of finding our own sound and kind of getting our thing together. And our shows were getting pretty exciting, although we were still very much misfits in the DC punk scene. We weren't hardcore, and we weren't really cool. We weren't very, I don't know. We just had our own thing going on, which ultimately was great. But it definitely took people a while to come around to us, and a lot of people just never liked us. So, but Amanda did. And then gradually, so did Ian. And so by the time we were ready to record our second record, we were playing out a lot. And we had all the songs written. And Ian was really into this group, this collection of songs that we had, which became the album Ten Spot. And so basically, you know, we kind of graduated from Samich to Discord Records, kept it all in the Mackay family. And that was how it happened.
So Samich was, yeah, the sister's label. Were there any other bands on Samich, or was that just kind of like a boutique label to try to get you guys heard?
No, they put out some other bands, too. I think they put out Swizz, maybe, which was Nathan's band at the time. I could be wrong about that. It's worth a look up on the internet. I know they put out some really awesome stuff. Maybe, did they put out Soulside? I know Discord put out Soulside. But Samich may have done some Soulside too, which became Girls Against Boys. With a different singer.
With a different guy, yeah. I did read that. How about this? How did the rise of alternative rock help or hurt you guys? Because I mean, I could see it kind of doing both things to you.
It definitely did both things to us, as it did to so many bands. It was this very, very slowly cresting wave, which we in the so-called underground felt all along. We were always very passionate about it, but I'm not sure that anybody quite ever believed, in a practical sense, that it would ever become pop music the way that it did. So as the wave started to crest, and when Nirvana broke, suddenly it became very possible for a band like Shudder to Think, who was truly unique, to have a shot at the big time, as it were, if you wanted it. I mean, a lot of bands did not want that. You know, certainly a lot of DC bands and Discord bands, Fugazi being sort of the biggest example, that was not what they were looking for. We at Shudder to Think, however, were always very commercial-minded. We just didn't want to compromise our music in order to sell records and be wildly popular. We wanted to be wildly popular and successful and rich and famous and make weirder and weirder records, you know, at every go. We wanted to do exactly what we wanted at a very high level. So when alternative became a commercial entity, that seemed like a possibility for the first time, and the last time, actually, as it would happen. So we signed to Epic Records, and we were always very honest about our ambition and our commercial aspirations. We signed to Epic Records. The guy who signed us had signed Pearl Jam and Rage Against the Machine, so he was sort of a golden boy, Michael Goldstone, at Epic, and he was just, he and the entire company were entirely, at least on the surface, behind what we were doing. We had very intensely passionate fans, although it was definitely, you know, a cult at the time, not on a mainstream level, and Michael Goldstone and Epic Records felt that they could translate that and grow that into a mainstream, wildly passionate, intensely.
That's what everybody wants, pretty much. Yeah.
That's what everybody wants. That's what we wanted. You know, unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. You know, we made Pony Express Record as our first major label album, which is to date the most difficult album we ever made, and musically. And while it helped us build on the intense fan base that we had, you know, I think maybe it sold, you know, 30 or 40,000 records, and that was about it. And by that point, or by the time we made our next record, 50,000 BC, by the time we were ready to make that next record, we were all discouraged that that we weren't doing better commercially, and so was the label. So also the tide was starting to shift where there was now a formula for quote-unquote so-called alternative.
Yeah, post-grunge comes to mind, term post-grunge.
Yeah, exactly. Radio rock. I mean, it had to be like Nirvana or like Pearl Jam, essentially. And while I love both of those bands, and you know, there really only needs to be one of each.
Then we got Creed, we got Marcy Playground, all these second-rate grunge wannabes.
Exactly.
It's like.
Exactly, and that was never really our MO. However, we were super psyched to try and make a more a more song-y, more pop influenced commercial record, and so we set about making 50,000 BC, which was sort of a little bit of a transitional record and a little bit of an in-betweener. We hadn't really figured out yet how to write traditional pop songs, which both Nathan and I later in our solo careers would kind of crack the code on. Unfortunately, you know, at that point, we really didn't know how to do it yet. And so we were sort of, you know, one foot in what Shudder to Think had been and one foot in what Shudder to Think might have been. And I love 50,000 BC. I think it's an awesome record. But, you know, it definitely wasn't the commercial breakthrough that the label was hoping for. And it wasn't quite as definitive style-wise as
Pony Express
record. Yeah. So, you know, we were changing. We were having growing pains.
Well, I love that you guys did it on your own terms, though. I mean, you guys didn't have to embarrass yourself to get, you know, Andy Wallace to mix the album, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, not at all. It was definitely our own thing. You know, and by that point, we were starting to get more into film and TV soundtracks, too, and The State was happening, and we started doing scores for some independent movies. So that was really where we were hoping we would go. What the dream at the time was, Shudder to Think will become a sort of full service, 360 kind of a band, which is to say, we'll score your films, do the instrumental background music, we'll write songs for your movies, and we'll make records when we feel like it and tour when we feel like it. So essentially, Shudder to Think was poised to become almost like a kind of, kind of gourmet sound house or sort of a boutique, you know, soundtrack band or something like that.
We'll do it all for you. Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
exactly, and all for ourselves, because really that's what we wanted to do. And we were all reaching 30, and we had girlfriends, and we wanted to have families, and our friendships were breaking down, and we didn't want to have to do the write a record, record a record, tour a record, grind every year, year after year. But by then, pop music, like, you know, boy bands and stuff were like starting to happen, and hip hop was taking over. And so there really wasn't much of a place for a band like us. And Epic Records was going through a lot of changes. By then, our A&R guy had left, so we didn't have that all-powerful champion at the label anymore. And I don't think at the time anybody saw the what was in the cards for the music industry, or if they did, they certainly weren't willing to admit it. So nobody was really into our vision for ourselves as this kind of new sort of band that could actually make art and make money making movies. So we got sort of, the band broke up. We didn't get dropped at that point, but the band broke up. We were discouraged. The label was discouraged. We knew we weren't going to get any help from them, and we certainly weren't. It was starting the damage that the whole Michigas, in answer to your original question of how did the alternative boom affect Shudder to Think for better and for worse, by that point it was affecting us for worse. It was starting to have diminishing returns creatively. And we were just all in a bad, very dark place, and so we ended the band. And actually, I stayed signed to Epic for a minute, and I think so did Nathan. But, I mean...
Is that where you guys released First Love, Last Rites? Or?
Yeah, yeah. We released First Love, Last Rites, I think, before 50,000 BC. So it was just like...
Was that your first score or first foray into film?
That was the first one.
And that had some big names on it. I mean, you guys got Jeff Buckley before he passed. What kind of guy was Jeff?
Jeff was family. He was a very, very dear friend for a brief moment. Jeff was incredible. I mean, he really was it's weird because on the one hand there was his talent and his genius, and then on the other hand it was just sort of like a goofy
normal guy.
Yeah, just sort of a goofy, doofy idiot. I wouldn't ever quite describe him as a normal guy, but definitely he was great. He was hilarious. I loved him.
I've been trying to pitch a script idea to many people. Maybe Wayne would like this, but. I think it's time for him to get his biopic for sure. Yeah,
it's in the works. People have been trying to make it for years.
Is it? Okay.
It's his mom sort of has the ultimate veto power and say in it, and I think it's been a little bit tough to get on its feet, maybe because of that. But I know that somebody owns the rights, I think maybe to the book Dream Brother or something like that, and they're trying to make it.
All right. On First Love, Last Rites, you also got to work with Billy Corgan. I know you guys did a little touring with him with Shudder to Think. What kind of guy was Billy to you?
Billy was great. He was a fan and a champion early on, in the Discord days of Shudder to Think, and so was Jeff. Actually, Jeff was a big Shudder to Think fan, and we just all got to be friends. We were all in sort of mutual. We were mutual fans of each other's music, and so Billy invited us on tour right when Siamese Dream came out. That was a trip to watch hit, because at the beginning of that tour, we were playing for maybe 500 people, opening for Pumpkins. Siamese Dream came out during that tour, and by the end of the tour it was 5-10,000.
Wow.
Large. And so when First Love, Last Rites came around, we just basically we started with our friends who we knew were fans and who would be psyched to do it, which is to say Billy and Jeff. And we knew that if Billy and Jeff were psyched to do something, we'd be able to get a lot of other people. And so we just started there, and then the dominoes kind of fell like that.
I love that. Yeah, it's such a great compilation, and I think people remember the soundtrack more than the movie for sure.
Thank you.
And okay, so we're talking the end of the 90s. The band's broken up. You guys are still are trying to do solo things or something like that. But MP3 has been invented, and the music tide is changing. So how was the beginning of the next decade for you, and how did it take for you guys to create this new group, Baby?
Well, basically, I was super into beats and electronic music and dance music in general, increasingly toward the end of the 90s. And, I was always kind of trying to get, or I should say, when we broke up, that's where my head was at. That's where the exciting music was. I really wasn't interested in most of the guitar music that I was hearing at that point. the thrilling ideas tended to be coming from the more electronic sector. So I think as a reaction to Shudder to Think, and just wanting to sort of there were sort of two factors. One was just needing a break from sort of obtuse guitar-based thinking. And another was being super into pop music, dance music, or electronic music, and more traditional song structure. So the pendulum just kind of swung way in the other direction for me, and I started recording just a ton of you know, my own version of dance music, which then became Baby.
I love it. Yeah, it was so hedonistic, and I mean, it had like a, it was reminiscent of Prince and like The Faint. How about Madchester? Were you ever a fan of Madchester music, like Primal Scream, The Charlatans, stuff like that?
Yeah, sure. I was more of a like late 70s and early 80s like disco and electronic guy, and then cutting to more sort of the IDM stuff that was happening at the end of the 90s, and then the electroclash stuff that started in the early aughts. But yeah, I was, you know, I listened to some of the Madchester stuff. That stuff never appealed to me quite so much because I always wanted a little bit more out of the songs, I guess. In retrospect, I've gone back and gotten way more into like Happy Mondays and Primal Scream and things like that. But at the time, it was really more like 70s and 80s disco and dance music, and then like fused with what was happening exactly in that moment, which, like I said, was sort of electric clash and IDM music. And, you know, things like Roxy music and the sort of more decadent end of art rock, I guess. So Baby came out of that, but we really never took it out of New York City. I think I was heartbroken, frankly, after Shudder to Think broke up, and the idea of starting another band and getting back into that lifestyle and those dysfunctional relationships with people who were my friends, who comprised the band Baby, but, you know, I just didn't want to go down that road again. So we kept it pretty small and kept it in and around New York City. And we made one record. I had stuff recorded for like another album or two, which maybe we'll see the light of day eventually, but we just never, it never went that far or that long. And then at the same time, I was continuing to write, you know, in the more guitar based Shudder to Think vein, and then also a more traditional, still exploring this idea that started when Shudder to Think was on Epic Records of, I want to really figure out, I want to learn about and explore more traditional kind of classic songwriting and song structure. And so that combination of things became my first solo record, Lapland, which, you know, if I had known in the 50,000 BC days what I had learned by the Lapland days, you know, maybe Shudder to Think wouldn't have had such a sort of tragic ending. But you know, so on the one hand there was Baby, which was the more experimental electronic and bubblegum end of things, and then on the other hand was Lapland, which was a more classic songwriting version and a mellower sort of more I don't know, shall we say VH1 version of what Shudder to Think was.
That's cool. How did you end up hooking up with Team Love Records? And that's kind of a burst label, right?
Yeah, Connor, again, it's this thing of having great fans. Connor was a Shudder to Think fan, and Saddle Creek was modeled largely after Discord. And so there was just, they were always very aware of Shudder to Think and what was going on in Discord. And when Connor started his label, started Team Love, we had a mutual publisher, this guy Nate Krenkel, who was the publisher at Sony Music, and he introduced us, and Nate was running Connor's label, Team Love. He had just left Sony Music Publishing, and Connor was just basically like, look, if there's anything you want to put out, I would love to put it out, which is how Lapland happened.
That's so cool. It just seems like not a lot of drama, just really easy, release a record.
Super easy. Honestly, like really a return to the sort of Discord way of doing things. I mean, at the time of Lapland, I was still very kind of shaken and somewhat insecure, you know, in a little bit of an identity tailspin from the, you know, dissolution of Shudder to Think. And so, and sort of the music business and the face of popular music in general. So again, we sort of did that on sort of a fairly small level. I played a few shows. I love the album. I love the songs. But, you know, but it wasn't a full-on commitment. By that time, I was really focusing most of my attention on film scoring. Doing a lot of independent stuff. I'd done Wet Hot American Summer by that point with my friend Teddy Shapiro. I'd done the movie Laurel Canyon. Shudder to Think had done High Art. I think I'd done the School of Rock by that point. So it was sort of, that was becoming more my
day job. Where my interest. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very awesome. So like at this point, did you ever think about just starting up Shudder to Think Records or Craig Redwin Records or something like that? Because, I mean, anybody can do it now. You've got all the connections. You got all the ties. It seems like that would be something easy to do.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it took me a little while before I wanted to do that. Like basically now I really stuff myself under the label Nerveland Records. But at the time I wasn't really interested in doing it myself. It took a few years.
Like I see a parallel with like Robert Pollard of Guided by Voices. He like, they were pretty indie. Then they went to a major for a couple albums, then got Disillusioned.
Wait, you know? hang on 1 second, Andy. Sure. My son just walked into the room. What's
that? I'm going to go swimming with Sophia.
Oh, that's great. Where are you going to go?
That is adorable.
No. Not that I know, but did you check his drawer? You did?
Where's my swimsuit?
I don't know. You're going to have to go naked.
Let's go find it. Ready? Do what? Asshole!
Hey, what's his name, Craig?
His name's Lennon.
Lennon, nice.
Yeah, his name's Lennon Wedren, and he's named after, my wife's last name is Lennon. She's Megan Lennon. And I met her, speaking of all these friends, you know, great friends and family in the state. I went to school, to college with Tom Lennon, Thomas Lennon, who was in the state. And that's how I met, and Megan is his sister. And so that's how I met my wife.
That's Lieutenant Dangle's sister, huh? That's awesome.
That's right. That's Dangle's sister.
Very cool. So, yeah, I mean, I saw a parallel with Robert Pollard, how he, you know, got disillusioned with the major label world and ended up starting his own thing. And now he releases like an album every 2 weeks, it seems. So I was thinking, yeah, is that ever how you want to start doing it soon or?
Well, I think, you know, an album a year at this point would be great. I definitely feel like I'm fully recovered from Shudder to Think shock. And you know, I was continuing to write and produce music at the same volume, if not more, than when I was in Shudder to Think. I just wasn't releasing any of it. So now I'm ready to just start releasing things on a more regular basis and just have it out there. I think, like, there's less confusion about where things are headed. I'm just not caught up at all or stressed much about the commercial end of things. I just want to be getting music out there, let it have its own life, continue to make movies, and continue to do my own thing. I have a really great like band and crew of musicians who I love to work with on both records and film soundtracks. So it's almost like the dream that Shudder to Think had, which was to be this kind of full service operation, is finally coming true. It's just not under the guise of Shudder to Think. You know, I've got this, I've got my label, Nerveland Records, which I'll probably continue to release things on. And, you know, I'm just going to continue to, I don't know, I guess just stick to the original dream. Just give it a different name.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think you're in like an ideal place where most people want to be in this business, and I definitely idolize that. And yeah, I was going to ask you one more question. How do you feel like about the social networking sites, and do you think that they've helped or harmed the business at all?
Well, I mean, you know, there's the question of the business, and then there's the question of the music. I think they've helped music in certain ways, and certainly they've hurt business in certain ways. You know, it's no longer viable to think that you're going to, it's no longer realistic to think that you're going to have a wildly successful, long-term, lifelong career at making records. However, it is finally a reality that you can make records that only sound like you and don't sound like anybody else and have a really great audience out there for them.
You have no input besides your fans, which I like, yeah.
That was not the case when Shudder to Think was railing against that, against those compartments and against those little cubicles of genres and rules about what you were and weren't allowed to sound like and look like and blah, blah, blah. It was a drag. We wanted to change every record, but that didn't work in the commercial sort of framework of the time. Ultimately, it sort of was what killed our spirit. I think it's much easier to do now, just to do your own thing, be your own artist, put out your own records, and have a nice go of it. That doesn't mean that you can make a living out of it, and certainly it's harder than ever to do that. The other thing that I think is a drag about the instantness of, of digital culture is that, like what you were saying before, people expect you to have your shit together. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on your radio show. People are allowed to have, you have to have your entire thing together by the first record and the first week of the first record. You know, it's just like there's no time to develop a voice. It's
yeah, I feel very, you very on different. That. Yeah. But me personally, I think it's a good thing. I started this, my own little podcast out of my house, about 6 months ago. I've had like the opportunity to talk to legends like Steve Albini, people from Pavement, the guy who owns the Metro. I've gotten to talk to you. So, I mean, that wouldn't have been able to happen, in the 90s. And I do really appreciate that.
I totally agree.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear what like an old punk like Ian would say about the social networking, because I think this is what they would kind of think would be like a utopia back in the early punk days. I mean, in the days of zines and everybody having their own opinion heard and stuff.
Yeah, it really is sort of like the promise of punk fulfilled. Like anybody can do it and everybody should, and it's free.
And there's no guy in a suit telling you what to say, which I love about that. So
yeah, that's right. That's right. It's a mixed bag, though. I mean, like there's something to be said for commercial pressure. It causes people, in the right dose, it causes people to do things that they would not do left to their own devices. And people left to their own devices tend to get their head stuck up their ass. So it's like you want a little bit of external pressure, something to sort of, get you up in the morning, get you thinking about who's listening to your music, and really get you thinking about what you want to be making and for whom, so I think there's a healthy balance. I actually think there's a pretty healthy balance happening right now. I'm really inspired by the music that I hear coming out literally every day, like in shovels and droves. The only frustration is that it's so, the turnover is so fast. It's just it sifts over and over and over on a daily basis. And our sort of attention span and our appetite for new material is so quick, and bottomless that I think there might be a richness and sort of like a deeper vein that is in the day-to-day getting sacrificed.
That's a possibility. Yeah.
And I would love to see a combination of exactly what we have now mixed with that deeper appetite and appreciation for more permanent art, I guess.
Yeah, I like the thing about the pressure. Would you guys never have even thought about making something like 50,000 BC without a little bit of external pressure? Or
It's really hard to know. It's the pressure that we were feeling from the label and the pressure that we were putting on ourselves, which we always put on ourselves, was it was just indistinguishable from, it was just a part of our lives at that point. I don't know what it would have been like, had we stayed on Discord, or, I think we probably would have broken up for different reasons. it's very hard to know what things would have been like in a sort of parallel universe,
Yeah.
But, but definitely we for better and for worse, there were commercial pressures. You know, I wish there had been a little less, but I was grateful for some.
Yeah. Well, I can see it like with Nirvana, you know, they had Bleach, and then with this commercial pressure, they were able to create a gem like Nevermind, which yeah, they probably wouldn't have done if they would have stayed on Sub Pop, you know.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, it's tough to say categorically that it's bad or that it's good.
And looking back, we got like rose-colored vision. We can see all this. They never really got to see what was in the future when they were doing it, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, yeah, every show I do, I like to do a top five list, and it's not scientifical. It's not, you know, anything that should be taken too seriously, but I do a top five album or band list, just try to keep it interesting with a different guest every week. last week I had Lynette Carolla, who is Adam Carolla's wife, and she's a diehard Bruce Springsteen fan, and we talked our top five Boss songs.
Awesome.
So today I thought it would be fitting to talk a little Discord Records with Craig Wedren and do our top five favorite Discord albums.
My favorite Discord albums are Rites of Spring.
I was going to say Rites of Spring. They were they're mostly known for, I mean, obviously the Fugazi thing, but they're also known for the straight edge thing. How much of the straight edge thing was prevalent back then, and how much of an influence was it on their band?
Well, the straight edge thing was quite prevalent, and I don't know how much influence it had on Rites of Spring, but I can tell you it had zero influence on Shutter to Think. I don't know. That's a good question. I guess I don't know.
Here's a question. How do you pronounce Guy's last name?
Guy Picciotto.
Guy Picciotto. Okay, I'm gonna go around saying that.
Picciotto. Something like that.
Cool.
So the Rites of Spring album, definitely probably my number one fave. The Minor Threat compilation that came out, it's not a compilation, it's like a collection of all of their records
complete discography, right?
Yeah, discography is just one of the greatest records of all time. But if I were to pick a Minor Threat album, it would be Out of Step. I love. I'm a huge fan of the Faith Void split LP. The Flex Your Head compilation is pretty massive. And Repeater by Fugazi.
Repeater's a classic too, yeah. I got on mine, I got like Soulside. You brought him up earlier. I didn't want to spoil the pooch here, but yeah, Soulside, it's Less Deep Inside Keeps. I guess it doesn't even say that on the album, but on the side of it. And yeah, as you were saying, that's the guys or three of the four guys from Girls Against Boys, right?
Yeah. I mean, but you know, it's tough to narrow it down to five. But
it's
I would say. And then you know, Get Your Goat.
Get Your Goat was on my list actually. Number three, Get Your Goat. I think that's as far as your early days, you guys had completely formed this sound that was really unmatched, especially in Discord, where a label that really, I mean, Variety is not really looked too great upon. I mean, they sure had a lot of classic music, but Variety wasn't one of the things that they can call their own.
Well, that's
you guys brought it. So
that's what we were talking about earlier. There just was no variety in general in the 90s within genres of music. And that's like one of the great positive things about the time we're living in now is everything's just mushed together. And I think a lot of that has to do actually with the advent of iTunes and iPods, is that everybody realized that they were actually listening to a much wider variety of music than they ever imagined. And so it just sort of all the little containers got broken and everything just spilled out on top of each other. It's very positive, I think.
I love it. It's a big smorgasbord now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, my number four, I had Scream. You got any thoughts about Scream? I had Banging the Drum.
Love Scream. I used to go, especially when Dave Grohl was in Scream, I just used to go to every one of their shows. They were completely electrifying. And I just remember so many nights at DC Space just, you know, dripping with sweat and like, you know, teen rage.
A thing I didn't know about them was that they were formed by the Stahl brothers, and Franz Stahl would eventually replace Pat Smear in the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I just saw that the Foo Fighters had a new movie about the making of their new album, and he goes over pretty much the whole history of the band since Nirvana broke up, and it's a really good...
Oh, that's so cool. I haven't seen it. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, it's a good flick. I would definitely recommend it. I mean, so Scream was pretty cool, and after they got Grohl, they were just unstoppable. Of course, Grohl would go on to find Nirvana, and they would be kind of left in the dust, to say, but...
Yeah. But you know, I think it ended at the right time. I mean, they made great records, and they ended on a high.
Very true. Yeah. So my top two, it's easy. I already said it. Minor Threat, the complete discography. That's that would be a top five of music of all time, not just DC records. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then number one, I think this is the finest hour of Fugazi. I think 13 songs. How you say about 13 songs, Greg?
I love 13 songs. I actually really like their later records when it started getting more arty and instrumental. I think they would have made a great soundtracks band. You know, like Yola Tango has been doing a lot of soundtracks. I think Fugazi would have been incredible at it. And actually, Brendan, that's what he does for a living now. He makes film soundtracks, and I think it would have made so much sense for them to go in that direction. But, you know, everybody has different ideas about what they want their band to be doing. So things fall apart.
Exactly.
But yeah, for me, like the early Fugazi, it's all about Repeater. And then later, I don't know, I just like all those few last records, you know, I think they're so cool.
Yeah, even their last one, The Argument, from about, it's been 10 years. Do you guys still stay in touch, you and Ian, or?
You know, via a little quick email here and there and a hello on I don't know if he's on Facebook or not. little email hellos, and when I'm in D.C., I try to see him.
Gotcha. Well, I'm sure everybody's waiting for them to get back together. But, yeah.
That doesn't seem very Fugazi.
Nah, yeah, that probably won't happen, you know. It's like Husker Du, right?
Yeah, I guess so, but even more so. I mean, you know, Husker Du were overtly commercial. Fugazi was all about the moment.
Very true. Well, I just got to thank Craig Wedren one more time. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to talk to my music podcast.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. It's nice to meet you.
And, yeah, so we got the new album, Wand. You said that's coming September?
Yeah, September 27th.
September 27th, be sure to support and get the album.
Yeah, do it, do it.
Do it, please. And so is that the soundtrack for a David Wayne movie? Or
no? No. That's a it's just a new solo album. And in fact, I'm making a series of narrative videos to accompany the record, which all told will add up to a movie.
Oh, that's awesome. So that's something that's going to gradually happen throughout the months after the release? Or?
Yeah, exactly. I made, you know, sort of the first video for it for the song Are We, which we released as a single a few months back. And then the next one's going to be for the song Crush You, which we're shooting chapter two of the story of Wand. And so, you know, tune into it and
so cool,
piece together the puzzle.
Any plans to tour, or is that just you're gonna just do one-off shows here and there? Or?
I think I'll do like little handfuls of shows. I'm gonna see to be determined.
Okay, very cool. On behalf of Andy Dare, I'd like to thank the guest Craig Wedren. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Andy Dare Show.